You know, so once you realize that it's not really about like the just the placements, because I'll talk to a mentor, a lot of producers, and they like I just want to do that, and I'm like, nah, you can't just do that, especially now. It's a tough game, and if you don't have records on Billboard, like you're not making that type of money from it, you know, either. So it's just like, no, you gotta really like you have to be your own brand, and you have to be able to you know, like you're doing, create product and not let it be one dimensional. And that was one of the things that I knew early on. It's like, okay, yeah, this is good. I do make some good money on depending on the song and depending on how well it does. It's cool, but there has to be more, because I can't build my lifestyle and be able to do the things I want just off of that. You know, so man, you're doing the right thing, bro, 'cause that's amazing.
Hey, what's up? This is Gabe from Legion Beats and MIDI Money, which is where we help music producers start, grow, and scale their music production businesses. Now, if you'd like to learn more about how I was able to turn Legion Beats into a profitable business and how you can join our community of hundreds of producers all working towards that same goal, head over to midimoney.com/go. All right, guys, welcome to the MIDI Money Podcast. Our guest today has won 3 Grammys. Is that the latest count? 3?
Yeah, okay, three. Yeah.
Okay, 3 Grammys as of right now. The credits we don't have all day, so I'll list off some of the highlights, like Kanye, Eminem. I think you just got a brand new Eminem placement, right? Drake.
Yeah, it just came out last night.
Uh-huh. Congrats, big congrats on that. Drake, Beyonce, Jay-Z. I mean, I don't even know. On and on and on. I think you guys get the idea. S1, man, it's a pleasure to be speaking with you.
Man, it's a pleasure to be on here, man. Pleasure.
Appreciate you taking the time. Man, well, congrats on the new Eminem placement. How did that one come about?
It came about, I actually been working with him for a while now. Like it's to a point now to where big ups Tracy McNew, who's over there. She's always like, yo, Marshall need a new batch from you, you know. So I constantly send him stuff every other week, and he records to him, and then when the album comes out, you know, I just happen to always have like one or two on the albums, you know. So it's just been a process of just learning his sound and learning what he gravitates toward the most, and just always make sure that I'm supplying that demand.
Yeah, for sure. So when you're sitting down to make beats, are you a lot of times thinking about a specific artist, or are you just doing kind of what inspires you and then going, okay, this would be good for this person?
Sometimes I am, but most of the time it's just me getting in there and just throwing the paint to the canvas and see what it comes up to be. And then after that, it's like, okay, let me listen to this and see where I can place these things and send them. I find that to be like the best for me, because sometimes having those limitations, just depending on what creative space I'm in, sometimes having those creative limitations when I'm in a different space will affect me creatively, you know. So I like to just kind of just get in there and create, and then once I'm done, see who it could possibly work for.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's how it is for me. Like I like to get in the studio and just try to get inspired. I think part of it is like, for me, I'm not, if I try to do something for something very specific, I start to overthink it. It's, you know?
Yes, that's exactly right. That's the same for me.
Yeah, man. So, you know, we talked a little bit, I mentioned just some of the accomplishments, sort of the music industry side of things, but you're also somebody who's been doing things on sort of the entrepreneurial side for a long time. You're kind of even, you know, sort of that first group of producers that started to leverage social media and the internet and technology, along with like Illmind and some of those guys. And we were talking before this, we had met up at a producer conference, you know, like 10 years ago. So you've been
10 years ago. That's crazy.
Yeah, man. Time flies. That seems like a million years ago right now. you've always kind of done a certain amount of both. I'm curious about what's that balance been like, or why didn't you just say, well, cool, I'm getting paid by the record label, or I'm getting paid, you know, over here. Like what also made you want to do kind of that entrepreneurial side of things too?
Well, early on, I realized that I had to treat this as a business, you know? So it's like treating it as a job. You know, I feel like if for those who want to be a rapper or artist or songwriter, if you're not doing that every day, then you're not treating it as a job. So once I realized that I wanted to be a producer, it was just me doing that every day, but then also expanding on that. Okay, this is just one aspect of what my career can be. How can I expand this? What can this lead to? And just always just being in a, just experimenting with things. Like my whole career, I always say that it's been trial and error, trying things, see if it works. If it works, stay with it. If it doesn't, move on to the next thing. You know, so it's just been a lot of just playing the game and just figuring out what works and throwing away what doesn't.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's to me, that's the approach, is experimentation. It's all an experiment, and it takes some of the pressure off too.
All experiment. Like, all
right, let's see what happens. And then, you know,
and at the end of the day, no one knows what will work until we try it.
Right.
You don't know. So you have to just throw things out and test things and try things and see if it works, because there, you know, there's a possibility that it may.
Yeah. And what do you think has given you the courage to do that, to quit your job and go full time in music, to decide you're going to write a book, to put out sample packs, to do all the stuff that you do? How do you find the courage to do that or make that decision?
Well, early on for me, even prior to me quitting my job, it was just me doing exactly what I said, trying things, like shooting my shots. And then I would always have, as many failures that I would always have these little small successes. And it was always those small successes that made me realize that, okay, there's a possibility. And this success wouldn't have happened if I wouldn't have applied some type of action. You know, so once I started to realize that, it was like, okay, let me try this. Okay, let me throw this out there. And there was very specific moments too. I remember a while back when I had my group Strange Fruit Project, and we were trying to pursue this thing, being rappers, and I was the producer of the group and also a rapper. And there were just always little moments. I remember one time a Winterfresh commercial came on TV, and they was like, be the next Winterfresh commercial, just submit your demo, or it was basically write a song for Winterfresh, shoot a video for it, send the video in, and we'll be picking a winner and you'll be the next face for Winterfresh. So we did it. I was like, I called my fellas up, and we went in the studio one weekend, did a 30-second commercial, had my friends Tahiti, who was a videographer, he shot a little video for it, sent it in. A couple months later, they hit us like, yo, you guys have been selected to be the next Wrigley commercial. So we had this commercial, and we were getting these very nice SAG checks from it. And it was just always little things like this.
You still have that video of that somewhere?
I do. I have it on the VHS tape. I'm gonna have to post that one day.
Yeah, man, you should definitely post that. So yeah, was that kind of like one of the first, like, that was one of the first like wins where you're like, okay, I feel good.
Yeah, that was one of the first wins, and then also like putting our first album out and seeing how that eventually got in the hands of Questlove from The Roots, which eventually got into the hands of Erykah Badu. And so that was another element. And then doing other things production-wise and seeing how it was spreading. And it's like, once that clicked, that I just have to plant the seed and move on to the next seed and plant. And at some point, these things, not everything, but some things will come back to you. And once I developed that concept, man, it was off to the races. Because at that point, it was like, let me see what all I can do every day. Mm-hmm. You know, let me make sure that every day I'm taking the time to invest in myself and put things out and try things and build on that. And over time, things just started to come back from the things that I was planning.
Right. No, that's interesting. It's kind of finding that balance, I think, between, you know, believing something can happen and not being delusional. And then also yes. like celebrating those wins along the way and recognizing them as like, okay, I think there's something here. And also recognize that you have accomplished those things. Cause if you're always just looking mm-hmm. like, well, I want to win 3 Grammys and be platinum and work with the biggest artist in the world. If that's the only thing you're looking at, you forget to celebrate those little wins along the way. You actually that's don't so realize true. How far you've come. Right.
That's so true. That is so true, man. So, like you have to, and you really have to like take it step by step. You know, a lot of times we'll want to go from A to Z, not realizing that there are so many steps. And these little small successes or small steps that we actually take are getting us closer to that Z, but you have to take those steps to get there.
Right, right. It's all those incremental little things, yeah, the daily habits. It's then the milestones, even the small milestones, and they all kind of they add up. So sounds like that early one was like the Wrigley commercial. And then you started to mention, Questlove got a hold of some of the music, and then Erykah Badu. What was that story, or what did that lead into?
Oh, that was amazing because, it was at the point we were putting our first album out. And we were, you remember OK Player, the form OK Player?
Yeah.
So basically, around the time this group, called Little Brother. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Little Brother, super dope hip hop group. And they were bubbling at the time. And then right when they started bubbling, like our name started to get in the same conversations and on the same forums. And Questlove took note of that. And what Erykah told me, so Badu later told me that Questlove made her listen to our CD, was like, yo, these guys are from Dallas too. You know, they live in Dallas too, and I'm going to make you listen to it. So after she heard it, she became an instant fan, man. And she called me one day, just out the blue, called me on my cell phone. And the way she got my number is when we first put our album out, we put it out independently, and we basically just pressed 1,000 CDs from CD Baby. And I was kind of the manager at the time for the group. So I had my number on the back of the CD, like for bookings. And she wound up getting my number from that. So she called me one day and we had this very long conversation. And she was like, man, let's keep in contact. I would love to work on some music with y'all and let's just build. So fast forward our next album.
What did that feel like when you heard, you know, somebody who's a legend like that say she was excited to work with you?
It was really just another confirmation for me that we were headed in the right direction. It goes back to those, having those successes like that kind of lets you know that you're aligned with your purpose and that you're on the right track, you know? Yeah. So that was just another moment of realizing that we're doing the right thing. And also to continue to do this, you know, continue to plant the seeds and continue to try things because it works. So like I say, that eventually led to her hopping on one of our songs, coming out, shooting a video with us. You know, that was the first time our video was playing on like VH1 Soul and a couple of other channels. And it was just one of those moments to where it was like you realize that, hey, as long as you apply the action, things can happen from it.
That's dope. And so in that group, it sounds like you were kind of the manager. So were you also an artist and a producer in that group or?
Yes, I started out rapping. So I was a rapper in the group, but then I was also the producer of the group as well. And I was just like the manager, really a little bit after we released that album. Then we started getting people coming to us. And then eventually we hired our good friend, Vincent, and a guy by the name of Brandon. They became our managers and taking on that load for us, so we can focus on just the music.
Got it. I know that's something that comes up is like, when am I ready for a manager, or when do I need a manager or whatever? What would you tell people about that?
I always say when you create something for the manager to, when you create a service for the manager, you know, there has to be something to manage first. You know, right. So I think a lot of time an artist will get caught up in, I need a manager to do this, when the main focus should be you doing what you're supposed to do, putting the material out and making sure that, you know, you're creating some type of momentum to build something for the manager to manage.
Right.
You know, and then at that point, then it's like, okay, I need someone to handle this so I can continue to focus on the music and the art while they can handle this for us. But I think there has to be a point of you really putting in the work. And then also a great thing too is when you don't have a manager, you tend to learn more about that side. And I think that's an important thing too. Like, because prior to getting a manager, we were so self-sufficient and we was doing everything, literally everything. I was I was mixing, I was mastering the albums, I was putting the albums together. You know, I was handling the bookings. So I knew that process, you know, and I was learning that process because I had to do it, you know. And then at some point, like I said, you hand that task over to someone else, but I know it. So I can be able to communicate certain things to the manager because I was able to learn it.
Yeah, no, I think that's so smart. I mean, I think sometimes producers think, oh, I just need this manager to save me, or this record label, or even this artist to save me. And it's like, you know, what did you say? Like you need to give the manager something to manage. Like it's actually the other way around. It's not that they create that in the first place. It's that you create it in the first place.
It grows
to a point where you actually need their help. It's not, absolutely, they don't create the demand.
It's not the other way around. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And that's another great point too, is by doing it yourself, which is what you kind of have to do anyways, it's also going to give you that skill set that's going to serve you to where even if somebody could save you, let's say, you know, day one, oh, you made a dope beat, now I'm going to be your manager or whatever, like you wouldn't understand what that person was doing. You wouldn't understand your place in the industry, and eventually you'd probably not be successful because you wouldn't know how to navigate that, but you put in all that time as the manager. And, you know, it sounds like you really had a lot of control. I mean, we were just talking before this, how you're running some of your own Facebook ads, you know what I mean? Which I was kind of surprised to hear, but that's dope. Cause it just sounds like you have that, a combination of like understanding, well, let me create that first before I'm going to hire a media manager a media buyer that's going to charge me, you know, $3,500 on top of the ad spend on top of the whatever. Well, let me learn it first. Let me create that demand.
Sure.
And that's impressive to see that you still have that humility and that hunger when you are you've made it by however you want to say that phrase, like, you know?
Yeah. I think too, because I'm such a student and I love learning. I love attaining information, and I love applying information to things, seeing if things work. Like I'm very intrigued with the process of just taking nothing and seeing something come from it, you know, whatever that process may be, you know, because I think it's different in certain aspects of what we do. But I think I'm just always a student, and I'm always learning certain things that I know is going to take me to the next level once I get it.
Yeah, no, I think that joy of learning is so important. If you lose that, you kind of lose, you're not progressing anymore. And I see it too. I really think there's such a parallel between producing and marketing and business and really everything, is that you can take that creativity, just like you're a student of the game for producing and learning about, you know, the VSTs and learning about the hardware and learning about music theory and whatever. Same thing over, okay, now I'm learning about Facebook ads and I'm learning about funnels and I'm learning about this and really anything. But if you can take that same creativity and excitement and apply it to it, that's when it becomes fun, and that's when the real, real big results,
you know, absolutely start. Absolutely. Totally agree.
Yeah, it's just hard sometimes, I think, for, you know, the audience for this podcast is producers, so that's why I kind of keep coming back to that. For it, like, as producers, a lot of times we have trouble applying that same mindset. We know we like making beats, cool, but then it's like, oh, I don't want to do any, I don't want to learn Facebook ads, I don't want to learn how to do this other stuff. But when you have the mindset that you do, then it's like, oh no, this is fun, I'm ready, let's go, let's dive in, let's figure it out. It's going to be, you know, it's a puzzle to solve today.
Yeah, I think when you realize that, like I can literally just sit in my room and make beats all day, or sit in the studio and make beats all day. But if you don't understand the other side of taking those and actually putting them out there and putting them in the right places and getting them to the right people, then they're just going to be beats that collect on your hard drive, you know? So it's always the mentality of building a product and presenting the product. No matter what it is, that's the beats, that's songs, that's hits, that's merchandise, you know, no matter what it is, it's always creating the product and presenting the product to your audience.
Right, right. Yeah, for sure. So with all that, with, you know, creating the product, making beats, creating all these different things, the merch, the kits, the book, remind me the title of the book?
The book is Pray, Focus, Plan, Execute. Actually, I got it right here.
Pray, Focus, Plan, Execute.
A memoir by S1. Yeah.
Dope. We'll come back to that in a minute. I just wanted to make sure we got the title.
We'll get
No,
to
no,
that.
Go ahead. Sorry, go ahead. Actually, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, this was one of my biggest accomplishments because I quit so many times in the process of writing this because it was just so exhausting. Well, it took probably a span of like 2.5 years, but when I sat down and was like, okay, I have to finish this, then I would say about 6 months.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Interesting. So what was the why'd you write the book?
I wrote the book once I realized like my purpose in anything I do is always to inspire and encourage and motivate people. I was like, how can I take all of my experiences and all of my failures and all of my insecurities and put them in one place in story form that people can read this? Because the one thing I realized about the book is a lot of people that have read it, they always hit me and like, yo, I'm going through this right, chapter 6, I'm going through this right now. Or yo, chapter 10, that's what I went through 6 months ago. You know, so I realized that just in me presenting those things and like I say, my insecurities and failures and showing people how I overcame those to get to my successes or my achievements, man, there's so much inspiration in that. You know, so that was my purpose for writing the book, is like, how can I put all of this in one thing so people can read this in story form to be inspired by it?
Nice.
And like I said, that was the purpose for writing it. It just was, the process of writing it was so exhausting. and going through the phases of being inspired one day and the next day, you can't think of anything. You're staring at a computer or a blank piece of paper. That was challenging as well, because it's like, okay, every day I know I need to write, but every day I don't have a lot of the inspiration or information coming to me to be able to write.
Right. Yeah. It sounds
you know,
like,
and that was frustrating at times. Same thing. Exact same thing.
Yeah. And I imagine that your experience as a producer probably helped of like, okay, I know about the ebb and flow of creativity and inspiration. Like I know, like I'm sure it's still extremely hard, but I imagine that at least helped with that process.
Yes. Yeah. It helped me understand like the process of creating is the same across the board, no matter what type of thing we're creating. The process is really the same and the mentality is still the same, the mindset. Another thing that helped me though too is probably about halfway through just the writing process, I hired a writing coach. And it was then having this writing coach, because my writing coach, Stephanie, she started to show me new ways to approach writing. And she started to, she showed me new ways of having different perspectives on writing. And that, in a nutshell, kind of flipped the whole thing of my whole approach, the way I was writing one-dimensionally. It kind of opened things up for me. So, so that's one thing too, is just having people that have experienced or done what you're trying to do or where you're trying to get to. Having those people around to show you certain things is everything.
Bro,
having mentors and having people that's a big key. That's a big key to getting to where you're trying to go in less time.
It's a huge gem. It's the shortcut. You know, that's what it's been for me, is, you know, starting to get an interest in something and, you know, okay, starting to learn it a little bit, getting that foundation, like we talked about, doing it on your own, understanding it enough. But then at a certain point, when you find, like you said, somebody who's actually done this at the level you're trying to do it, or the next level from you, it's such a shortcut. Instead of, well, let me do even more and more trial and error there where it's going to take me years, I can actually shortcut that and compress that time, that decade into, you know, months or weeks, because this person has already tried all those things and they can help not only give like the information, because I feel like that is something that in, you know, 2020, 2021, it's like we have plenty of information. It's more about the insight of like, okay, I can take in all this information, but what's the information that's relevant to me right now that's going to help me move the needle? And when somebody's experienced it and been through it, they can look at your situation and say, okay, here's how you need to approach this next. Here's the next step. Here's how you can actually, you know, make that progress and actually speed up, you know, to get the result you're trying to get.
So important. It's so important, man.
It's huge, huge. So what's your time split like now between all the things? I mean, I know the book is written, but you know, between all these different projects you're doing, between, you know, the kits, making beats, I don't know, networking, hopping on podcasts, you know, all that kind of stuff. How do you kind of approach being a dad, right? How do you approach all that?
It kind of changes every day, man. I think, you know, time management is everything. I know you know that. So it's really me taking every Sunday to see what my week is like. Okay, Monday and Tuesday is going to be focused on these specific projects. Wednesday may just be catching up on a podcast that I have to do, trying to schedule most of those in my Wednesday. My Thursday may be like no music. It may be just all business stuff. You know, Fridays may be working on, you know, getting with my musicians and working on sample packs or samples or melodies or whatever. You know, so every week is different, but it's just me looking at my week prior to it and filling the slots and what's important for that week and prioritizing what's important.
Right. No, I think two things there that are huge. One is like prioritizing is like everything. And I know mm-hmm. for me, it's, I try to look at, okay, we have this list of, 100 things at any minute we could be doing, but then it's like, okay, well, if I could only do one thing in this next hour today, what would that one thing be? And then let me knock that out, or three things, you know, what are those priorities?
I just saw your video of you, the choosing three things. That's so important, man. Like just choosing three things every day, what you want to accomplish and focus on those things. And then once you do that, you'll start to see these incremental, you'll start to see these incremental elevations of you getting things done and accomplishing things, you know, because it's so easy. And I fall victim to this sometimes is, we'll do things like my whole week will be completely full of things. And then I'll come back at the end of the week and be like, what have I actually accomplished though? Right. You know, because being busy doesn't always equate to being productive.
Yeah.
Ooh, you know, yes. filling your schedule in with things doesn't mean that you're productive. So it's like, what are the main things what are the priority tasks that I need to be doing to get to where I'm trying to go or get to where I'm trying to complete this goal or reach this goal?
Man, you said it. Being busy doesn't equate to being productive. I think that's perfect. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to get caught up in that trap of like, oh, I'm grinding, I'm doing it, I'm working so hard. It's like there's nothing, you know, that's not something to be celebrated to me. It's like, oh, great, you filled up your day. Cool. Yeah. Like you should have spent that time with your kid. Like why? Like being busy is not cool.
No, that's so true, man.
Getting the result.
That's so true, man. Getting the result is cool. You know, and that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, just trial and error, you know, because, you know, you realize some things that may not be working. That's just keeping you busy, you know, and you have to kind of be able to monitor these things and monitor your task and see what's working, see what's not working, to be able to make the proper adjustments to put you back in alignment with, with you reaching the goal and being productive.
Yeah. And what's been huge for me, and I'm curious your take on this, is as I find the things that work and the things that are getting me the result, then it becomes about, okay, now I've created that. Now, how can I leverage maybe automating this or delegating it to somebody else? Or because, you know, we all have the same amount of time in the day, but one of the biggest pieces of leverage we have is we can form a team, or we can team up with people, or we can find software and ways to automate things so that now I can still get that result and even take less of my own time. That's been the progression for me of taking that same day and getting more and more accomplished.
That is so important, man. Yeah, that's key. Like everything you just said is key. And then in the process of what you said, I think a lot of it too is, And I think a lot of producers and even beyond producers, just people lack this, is having patience. Mm-hmm. Patience is key because, you know, like I told you, I've been the last few weeks I've been dabbling in the Facebook ads and I've been very intrigued with the process and trying to figure it out. And it's like a game. And what I'm doing now, the process that I'm in now is actually testing. So, you know, when I'm testing certain ads, different ad sets, different audiences. And one thing I noticed, I remember early on when I was doing it, and I had a guy, Big Ups Cashmere, he was showing me some things as well. And the first 2 days, I wasn't getting the results. I wasn't getting the results I wanted. And I was like, man, maybe it's not working. And he was like, you got to have patience to give it time. It's got to have time to learn, and it's got to have time to work the algorithms first. And then, you know, so a lot of times we'll do this. We'll, because something is not working, we're not giving enough time to work. You know, you got to have that patience to see if it's actually going to work. Because what will happen is sometimes we'll change the change everything up when it was on path to actually work, if we would have just allowed it to work a little bit longer and have the patience to let it do what it's supposed to do.
I love that. I love, it's a great analogy. It's yeah, it's just like, okay, you're working on this part of your business or your career or whatever. And it's easy to get frustrated and be like, oh, I put in 3 days on this or whatever. So now I'm going to give up, or I'm going to try something else, or the next shiny object, or, you know, this is a scam, I don't like this, or whatever. But you got to just, you know, keep working on it, keep building on those small successes, but keep, you know, stick with it. I like your analogy. It's the same thing. You set up an ad in Facebook ads, or really any paid ads platform. It's the same idea. If you run it and you run it for a day and you're like, oh, I just spent whatever, $100. I didn't make any money back. Let me shut it off, or let me change. It's like, no, you gotta let the algorithm, you gotta let that artificial intelligence of the Facebook ads platform go for a little bit and put it in front of people in different situations and all these different things, so it can gather the data, so it can start to optimize, so it can actually, you know, get those results. That's cool. I've never heard that analogy, but it's great. It's the same idea.
Yeah, it's the exact same idea. And that's really what I just kind of been learning in the process of doing that. You know, because prior to that, like a year or two when I was doing the ads, it was just exactly what you just said. Like trying it a couple of days and not getting much from it, be like, okay, this doesn't work. Let me move on to something else. But then it goes back to learning and retrieving that information and actually learning something. And then once I started learning, it's like, oh, okay, that's not how it works at all. You know, and then I can start learning it or trying it appropriately through the process of how it's supposed to be done.
right, because you took the time, you learned, you know, okay, now I can have
because patience. I took the time to learn it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure. I love that. And then it's funny too, because it's kind of keeping the analogy going. Then from there, it's like, okay, I started to figure this out. Now how can I leverage this more? Well, you start to learn more and you say, okay, well, I realized that I needed to get about 8,000 impressions before I got the right amount of data. Oh, I just realized if I'm willing to spend, you know, $300 today to learn that, I can get that information faster. I can leverage that time. I can leverage the position I'm in. Maybe I wasn't able to spend $300 in a day before, but right now I can. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, even more so, at a certain point, you're going to be like, okay, we're extremely profitable. We're getting, you know, 1.5, 2x, you know, return on ad spend every day. Now it's actually going to make sense for me to hire that media buyer who is $3,500 on top of the ad spend and whatever, because I'm actually going to be more profitable and I can put my time and attention onto the next, you know, the next thing.
That's right, man. Man. Bro. So I see you figured that out early on, huh?
I mean, yes and no. Like, I was running my own Facebook ads for years, you know, because it made sense to me. It made sense mm-hmm. that I should be in there and I should be spending those hours a day learning about it and really tweaking and testing and getting really good at the process. And that was a good use of my time for a long time. Now, more recently, it's gotten to the point where, yes, I can't, I know I keep saying $3,500, that's what I'm paying, you know, one of my media buyers, you know, on top of the ad spend and whatever, but it's because, okay, I know that I can still be profitable past that. And now I can buy my time back at a discount, where actually that $3,500 in a month is, it's not me spending $3,500 in a month, it's me buying my own time back at a discount, because my time is actually now more valuable than that. It wasn't a year ago, it wasn't, you know, 2 or 3 years ago for sure, but now it is, and that's kind of the progression.
No, that's so dope.
Man, so I know I'm kind of jumping all over the place, but
No,
so
that's good. That's good.
So we're in your story. We're talking about, you know, connect with Erykah Badu. I know a huge moment for you was making that connection with Kanye. Can you talk a little bit about how that came to be and just tell that story?
Absolutely. So the Kanye situation came from my good friend by the name of Rhymefest. You know, Rhymefest, he's a dope writer, songwriter, and artist who was working with Kanye and still is working with Kanye to this day on just writing. You know, so at that particular time, it was a situation where I started working with Rhymefest on his album, and I sent him some beats. He hit me back. he was like, yo, I love these beats that you sent me, but I got a situation. I only have enough to pay you for two beats because I'm at the end of my budget. Like, I don't have any more budget to be able to pay you for it. Are you cool with that? And I was like, yeah, I'm not tripping. Just pay me for the two beats and I'll just give you the other two beats. So I did that. His album comes out, and out the blue one day, he just hits me. He gets me a call on my cell, and he's whispering. And he's like, yo, S, send me some beats through. I'm in the studio with Kanye, and if I get the opportunity, I'll try to play them for him. So I was like, cool. So I wind up sending him some beats. He didn't play them at the time. So about a week and a half passed, and I'm already assuming that, okay, he didn't hit me back. So number one, Kanye didn't like it, or two, he wasn't able to play the beats for him. You know, so that's already my assumption in my mind. But about 2 weeks later, he sends me a text, and the text was like, yo, Kanye is loving your stuff. He said he's about to change your life. Cool. You know, so I'm reading this text.
Do you remember that moment?
This is, I remember the moment like it was yesterday.
It must have been amazing.
So I'm looking at this text, and I'm like, yo, this is crazy. So a couple of days later, my wife and I, we're at Red Lobster, we're eating. And while we're eating, I get an email that comes through, an email alert. And the email is from Don C, who was managing Kanye at the time. And on his email, it was like, yo, S, get to the airport soon. We're flying you out to Hawaii to come work with Kanye. So I wind up going out flying out to Hawaii. And you can just imagine this whole 6-hour flight that I'm on. I'm just sitting here thinking like what's going on? Like, what's happening? Things is happening so fast. So I get to Hawaii, and that's when I first was able to meet Kanye. When I first got to the studio, it was him, Romfest, and an engineer in the room, and he introduced us. And then Ye was like, yo, I'm loving your beats. They making me want to rap again. I already recorded to one, the one with the chance you sent. I'm going to play it for you. Check it out. So he hits play. And I remember just hearing the power joint, him rapping on it. And it was a completely different version, like different raps, different hook. But I remember just listening. And it was like, yo, like, how did I end up here? Like, Kanye is actually rhyming over my beats. And it was just amazing. A moment, man, because that was one of my dreams, man. I remember when College Dropout first came out, and just listening to this album was like, yo, I got to work with Kanye one day. Like, this is what I love, like this type of music and what he's doing. Like, I got to work with him one day. So to be in that moment, I started all these prior thoughts and what I used to think in those moments came back to me. And it was just very emotional, man. Just like, yo, how did I end up here in the same room with Kanye? And he's actually rapping over my beat.
Bro, that is, I got goosebumps. That's incredible. And then the fact, so that first song you heard was Power, the first one that you guys worked on? Because that's,
yeah, the
I
first
mean,
song
such
that we,
a
the,
iconic song. I mean, that's, God, that's, it's like a perfect story. It's amazing.
That was literally the first song that I did with Kanye.
Wow.
Was the Power joint.
Wow.
Yeah.
that is dope. And then so you stayed out there in Hawaii for a little bit, and you worked on a few different songs, or how did that process
yeah work? I stayed out there for 2 weeks. You know, after I heard that, he was like, yo, I would love for you to stay out here for a couple of weeks and help me. I'm working on this at my album, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. Stay out, hang out, and help us work on the album. So I wound up staying out there and meeting a lot of people. After the 2 weeks, I went back home. And at that moment, my whole mindset was like, yo, okay, I just went out here to work with Kanye. I got his contact information. There's no reason why I shouldn't be sending him something every day. Like, everything else didn't matter at that moment. That was the plan. That was the whole goal, is to make sure that I'm sending him stuff every day. So I will send him the batch. He would email me, yo, hold this one. Next day, I sent him another batch. Yo, hold these two. Next day, I sent him some more beats, and then he was like, man, I need all these beats. Come back out to Hawaii so we can track all of them. So I flew back out to Hawaii, And that's when I found out that Power was going to be his first single, because they were actually trying to get the song right, you know, to be able to release that first.
Yeah.
And yeah.
What was that process like? Yeah. As far as, you know, I know you mentioned the version that you heard was different than how it ended up. And I know from what I've heard that Kanye is definitely somebody who takes a bunch of different influences and takes, or not even just influences, but like different people in the room and ideas, yeah, and kind of masterminds it all together and tries all different versions. Is that mm-hmm. accurate? Is that kind of what the process looks like?
Yeah. So, so I brought like the foundation in, the break, the sample, like the siren. And then, of course, Kanye added his magic to it. He added another sample to it. And then, of course, you got Mike Dean and Jeff Basker, who did some additional production on it as well. They come and add their sauce to it. And then in the process of that, he had different songwriters trying different hooks to it. He had different artists jumping onto it, you know, just trying different verses. And the one thing about Kanye is it's always the best idea is gonna win, no matter who you are. No matter if you're the smallest producer in the room, the smallest songwriter, nobody knows you. Like, if you deliver the best idea for the song, then your idea is going to remain on the song. You know, so it's very competitive, but at the same time, everyone has a fair chance and an fair opportunity into actually making the song. It's just about what you deliver.
Wow, that's cool. So it's that seems like some real leadership, like not letting, I'm sure there's definitely some big egos in the room. I mean, you guys are, you know, the best in the world, and but still to know that it's a meritocracy in that way, where it's like, whoever's got the best idea, cool, let's just go with that.
Yeah.
That's really cool to hear that it wasn't like, oh, well, I didn't come up with that one, so I'm not going to do that or
yeah, anything like no, that. It was a very exciting process. However, at times it was very intimidating.
I can imagine,
because you're competing with so many great minds. It's like, oh snap, and you're bouncing back and forth from rooms, listening to other people's contributions, what they're contributing, and it's intimidating. But at the same time, I had to keep reminding myself that I wasn't there by chance. There was a reason that I was in the room. And yeah, it's just all about having the confidence, you know, having the right confidence that I knew that I was supposed to be there and there was a purpose and a reason for me actually being there.
Right, right. Yeah, man. I got these construction guys next door, but we'll power through it. But
we'll get through it.
So that was almost exactly 10 years ago, right? And I know you dropped a kit based off of that, which I thought was really cool, really cool concept. How did you get the idea to do that, or where did that kind of come from?
Well, the idea was sparked by me not releasing something in a while, and I was like, okay, I have to get back consistent with releasing things. So I knew that was coming up. I had did this thing with Spotify had hit me up. It was like, yo, we're doing this rollout for My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. We want you to be one of the narrators on this little minute cartoon narration that they put together. So I did that, and then I remember after that, I was like, oh, I gotta create something. Since I was a part of that project, let me figure out something to create. And that's when I came up with the idea of creating my kit that I released called Sounds and Loops. I made from MBTDF, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. And basically the whole theme and concept for that kit was just me going through old hard drives and those sessions and those beats that Kanye had and pulling elements from those beats and reimagining them, you know, and doing certain things to them and you know, just having fun with it and putting it in a kit and giving it to the world or releasing it to the world.
That's awesome. It's a dope concept, and it's something, you know, I love it because it's sort of this combination of the sort of traditional industry stuff that you would do, and then but now how do I mm-hmm. take that, how do I flip that, how do I leverage that into something that, you know, that you have ownership of, or that is just or just doesn't even matter that necessarily, but just a reimagining of it. How can I let other producers, you know, be a part of this in a different way? It's
a
cool concept.
It was cool, and then once I had that concept, I just kind of continued to build on it, like, how can I still make this this theme, how can I still involve people and actually put them in the experience? So you have the sounds, which was basically sounds that I was using and creating around that time. And then I think I put like two chapters of the book that actually was talking about how the, you know, I have a chapter in the book called Heaven Sent Che, was basically talking about the what I just told you about Rhymefest and how that came about. And then the chapter after that is called I Got the Power. And it's really detailing that whole situation being in Hawaii, you know, and what I was actually seeing and going through. And it really puts you in my moment of me being out there in Hawaii, you know. So I'll put those two chapters in there as well. And yeah, just seeing how it could increase the value of the product.
I love it. I love it. Something I talk about a lot is how can you increase the value? Because like, yeah, there's a lot of people selling, you know, kits and stuff. But how can I do something different? How can I put a twist on it? Well, for one, you have an incredible story that goes along with it. So that's part of it. But then it's also, how can I even take that to the next level? How can I bring people in? How can I incorporate that story even more? And then so you're including the chapters from your book. And it's like, for me, even just hearing you tell that story, I was like, this is amazing. So it just creates this, this super cool experience, you know, where it's like, okay, as a producer, I can download this kit, I can play with it, I can be in that story, I can feel like I'm living it, I can feel like I'm there. It's just a dope concept. I know, I'll just shout it out real quick. People can grab that at s1kits.com, right, if they want to check that out.
Yeah, grab it at, you can grab the physical at s1kits.com, and then I have the ebook at Amazon, and then I have my audiobook at Audible.
Dope.
So I did an audiobook as well, which actually I just got nominated for a Solvis Award. You know, hey. It's kind of like the. So I was pretty excited about that because that was definitely definitely unexpected when I was recording the audiobook.
Dope, bro, man, congratulations! I actually just downloaded the audiobook. I haven't listened to it yet, but I'm excited to for sure. So I
appreciate it, man. Yeah, I wanted to do some. Add value to the audiobook too. So me and my guy, I know you know Kelvin Wooten, incredible composer, musician, producer. We went through and scored it. So in between chapters, you got different compositions and then like I say, I narrated the book to make it a little bit more personal. I had my guy Rhymefest. He did the about the art. He read the narrated the about the author for me. The audiobook, it came out really well.
Amazing. Always seeing how you can create more value. How can you be more creative? How can you put a twist on it? How can you stay hungry and do something different? I love it, man. It's super inspiring.
Yeah,
man. Well, I think we'll probably wrap it up pretty soon here. I know I'm excited. We talked about we're gonna hop on and check out your ads manager and geek out a little bit. So we'll get working on some of that. Man, before we get out of here, if you could just let people know, you know, where to find you, if you got anything coming up, if you got anything you want to end on, any combination of those three things, let me know.
Okay, yeah. So y'all can follow me on socials, Instagram, Twitter. At Symbolic One, that's SymbolicOne. So make sure you follow me, hit me up. You know, I love replying back to people. You know, make sure you get the book. So everything, s1kits.com is pretty much the one-stop shop for all my products, from the book to my kits to merch. So make sure you hit me up on that. And then what else? And then as far as future things, man, I'm just having fun, man, working on a bunch of projects that I have working on. Y'all check the new Eminem out that came out today. Produced a song called Discombobulated with my guy Lone Star Music, Dr. Dre, and Freno. So we just constantly working, constantly creating, and seeing how we can continue to push the envelope.
Love it. S1, appreciate you taking the time, bro.
Man, appreciate you, bro.
Thank you for listening to the MIDI Money Podcast. If you're not subscribed already, please be sure to do that right now on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate it if you do me a quick favor and rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or comment and like the videos on YouTube. You know, those ratings, reviews, those comments, they all show that people are getting value, helps the algorithm, and helps get this podcast out to more producers. So it means so much to me if you'd be willing to take a couple minutes to do that. Oh, and if you'd like to learn more about how I was able to turn Legion Beats into a profitable business and how you can join our community of hundreds of producers all working towards that same goal, head over to MIDIMoney.com/go.